Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Value Guys Stock Talk Show with the Value Guys. I'm Val Hughes.
And I am Momentum.
And we are 32.5-year Wall Street veterans who have had to take on secret identities and go underground in order to provide you with our candid views on a handful of stocks we screen for here in the shop each week. You've seen our faces on TV, you've seen us quoted in the news, but our bosses would never allow our unfiltered views on the air. So we've disguised our voices, and they'll never know. This week, we've done a fascinating screen about those eight stocks that got through the 52-week low screen, and we'll go through them. But before we get to that, a couple of important caveats. First, this show is for entertainment purposes only. That's not a guarantee. Secondly, while Mo and I are professional money managers during the week, here on the show, you know, we've avoided any of the careful fundamental analysis we do during the week for paying clients. Third, our lawyers say to remind you that we don't have your best interests in mind, so do your own work. And fourth, I've been drinking a little bit this week, I think a little more than usual, Mo, and I'm in your house, so it's your fault. But in any case, see all those caveats and more at www.thevalueguys.com. There's also indexes to past shows, indexed by ticker. We've got a Twitter feed at Value Guys and a Facebook page. And, of course, we're on iTunes Top 50, which it's been about 8 years now. So people seem to like the show. Thanks very much. We do take mail, so write in at val@thevalueguys.com. We do try to answer every email.
We accept money.
And, yes, of course, you can send us stereo equipment as well. That could get you in the front of the line on the email. So what? I already gave the caveats. So it's October 16th, and we're doing a show about the 52-week low. We've gone through every single one of the eight stocks that hit a 52-week low today, October 16th, and we're happy to talk about the three or four we picked out. But before we get to that, one of the fans' favorite segments here on the show, Value Guys Wall Street News featuring Momentum.
Now,
Mo,
let me
take it away completely, because I'm going to go. I got an errand to run. So,
well, let me just ask you a question. What do you mean by that?
By which thing?
The thing you just said.
I don't know. Well, the drinking part, that should be obvious to listeners. The 52-week low.
Nope, I forget what we were saying.
A fan's favorite part of the show?
Yes.
What I mean by that?
No, I meant grammatically. When you said it is a fan's favorite part, did you mean a fan's or
the fans? No, we get
all one or two?
We get a lot of write-ins. I don't want to say the amount. Our systems are down. I don't know how many people up for that. Absolutely, but I can't say the exact amount.
Okay.
Our systems aren't yet
recording
that information.
Another week with no government.
I know.
What'd you do special?
You know, I was so glad no foreign nation attacked us, because you got to worry about, you know, having a fully functional military. Other than that,
were you stopping at
red
lights?
I didn't mail a letter. I'm mostly on email now. Right. So I didn't miss the post office. I mean, what else do they do? The highways seem to be running.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't have any problems, really. Maybe
we don't need them. Maybe it's sort of a myth that
they
tell us how important they are. They go away. Have you noticed any difference?
Well, I did notice that my email was not being searched.
Yeah.
Because the speed, the internet speed was a little faster. I picked up on that.
So that's positive.
Fewer DEA guys in my backyard.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's true.
But generally, I didn't notice a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean,
so maybe the whole Republican idea that we just don't. I mean, there's no reason why we have to reopen the government. People talk as though it's a foregone conclusion that we're going to reopen it.
Well,
we're not.
Maybe we're not going to. You know, do they reopen a store that nobody goes in?
Right. And after it's been closed for, you know, a month or 2 months or 3 months and nobody really misses it anymore.
Well,
maybe
honestly,
you just never open that store.
Like, it's like the Kmart chain or whatever. It's like, oh, I miss it, but I never actually shop there.
Yeah.
But
so,
I don't know.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because another month goes by. We don't have a government. People do get used to it.
Wait a minute, Mo. Breaking news.
What?
Breaking news. It's October 16th, and we're just learning that...
Minutes ago.
3 minutes ago, the government's back open.
Right, because John Boehner just texted me.
Yeah, somebody is. Well, I think that's.
That's really that's no. News. I'm getting another text. Oh. I'm getting. There's a correction. No, the government's not open. That was just a cleaning lady who had turned the lights on. No, they found the source of that. No, the government actually is still dark.
One thing I noticed is there's fewer helicopters flying around.
There are none.
Yeah, I don't see any. I mean, it's a beautiful night, and not a single aircraft.
That's another plus. Well, at any rate, so another
we're
week.
Thinking about.
So, but we.
I will say one thing, Mo, about this government shutdown.
Yes.
Fewer cars on the highway. I mean, I don't know how many government workers are staying home, but I tell you, when you take the government workers off the streets,
right,
it seems like there's more room for the other people.
When there's no government,
yeah,
there's no spending. When there's no spending, you don't have to worry about hitting that debt limit.
I don't know what all the worry is right
now. So think of how much money did we just save in the last few weeks? I'm feeling kind of flush myself.
Well, you were saying this last week that you were like saving like $50 bucks a day or something.
Yeah.
Have you ended up spending that on
$50 an hour? My wife has.
So there is some benefit in the
merchants. It's a trickle down
effect. Merchants. Yeah. I mean, rent's not cheap.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I guess there's a deal, but it's off on. I mean, is Boehner continuing to stay in touch with you? Do you still have those college photos?
That's why we get such good information. But so tell me something. You did this screen. There's only eight, and this has been a roaring market, only eight stocks that are at their 52-week
low. Here's the thing. If you look at last week's show, and I say week, but it could have been months. Who knows? But the last show, we had a guys in suits gave me these ideas show, remember?
Yeah.
Remember those guys by the elevator?
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't even want to talk about it. I'm already on shaky legal ground, even saying what I've already said. So this week I wanted to stay a little more pure. Why mess around? Who needs legal compliance, all those guys on your back, right?
Right.
Let's go to Yahoo Finance and do a screen that your mom could do, right?
Right.
It's what hit the 52-week low. Now here's the thing. When you run the 52-week low on this particular screen, you also get the 52-week high. I had reams of pages. I brought them here. There's a dozen pages of the 52-week low, which I think is like 400 stocks.
And only seven.
There were 10, but two were gold miners. I left them out. There were 10. I brought eight legitimate names, 52-week low. And I think that's pretty interesting. I mean, don't you think one of those is going to outperform over the next year or two?
Well, yeah. When we first looked through them, it's not Miss America pageant with these seven candidates.
These aren't the beauty queens, no.
No, they are not the beauty queens, but there are there's interesting stories with every single one.
All right, so we got three names this week off the 52-week low list that you can do in Yahoo Finance, and we're going to go alphabetical just to keep it organized, mainly for me, I think.
Yeah.
First up. And this is a name many of you, it's in the news, JCPenney. Second up, if you're going to fast forward, might as well tell you what the names are. Newmont Mining, we're going to do. It's a mining company named Newmont. You know, they do gold and stuff. And then Nuance Communications, ticker NUAN. So first up, JCPenney. Mo, what are your thoughts? JCPenney, 52-week low list. It's in the news, you know, they just... they're nearly bankrupt. They're firing guys. They got that head of Apple retail to join them. It was, I think, Ackman's idea.
Yeah.
Now he's gone. Ackman sold his stock. 52-week low. A lot of water under the bridge on this. It's been in workout mode for 8 years.
Has it been?
I think. A long time. They've been through, half a dozen CEOs, all with turnaround ideas. One guy from finance, one guy from merchandise, one guy from another planet with special powers. They've had them all in there. None of them are succeeding, and so they're back to the prior guy who is reintroducing some of the old sales techniques that the head of Apple retail, when he came in, he got rid of things like weekly sales, things that there was 100 years of history,
right?
But that didn't work. So who knows? I mean, they just did an offering. They sold a third of the equity market cap. The reason to look at it is it's at a 52-week low. That's the screen. Nothing more.
Right.
It's
right.
it.
Right. Well, you know, here's what surprises me, just when, and I'm going to let you deal with the fundamentals, and I'll just kind of weave you a story from what I'm seeing in the charts here. This is a company that its stock was as high as $42. $42 back in February of 2012.
It was 100 in 07,
yeah.
Mo.
So it's been going more or less with a couple of head fakes. It's been heading straight down ever since then, ever since February 2012. Here's what I don't understand. This company just went through the most serious due diligence a company will ever go through in its life, which is the tire kicking that takes place before you do an 84 million share offering.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, as they used to say, open up the kimono.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is fair game. And so they just went under the microscope and they convinced enough people.
800 million.
Well, assuming each person bought one share, yeah, but eight
well, 800 million bucks. That's a big offer.
Right. 84 million shares were sold, and that has got to be a spectacularly good story. I mean, you and I have both taken companies public. When you do IPOs, it's nowhere near.
I think this was one of the largest ever. I can't quote
right.
you. But
so on one hand, you've got a company that's just had all the tires kicked, and the very fact that they can sell that many shares tells you the story was pretty good. Then I look at what the stock has done since then. Then there's two things that are happening. One, there are the persistent rumors that they're filing for bankruptcy, which seems odd or crazy given the fact that they just went under the microscope and they just got, you know, $800 million in the door. If that proves to be wrong, I might look at this for the simple reason that sometimes when a company does an offering that big, the market's got indigestion problems. And so the stock weakens mechanically because there's too much stock out there for the market to absorb. When that imbalance corrects itself, you can have a pretty nice rebound, assuming they're not going bankrupt. So now it's time to sort of look at the fundamentals, because looking at what you can see here, is it reasonable to suspect that they could go bankrupt?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question
no,
here.
No, it's actually it's the billion-dollar question.
The market value is $2.3 billion. The enterprise value, which includes the debt, is $6.6 billion. So the quick calculation is there's a $4.4 billion delta there, and that's net debt. So $4.4 billion... even at a 5% rate, which they probably couldn't get, what's that add up to? It's $200 million a year, and they do, what's the EBITDA? You know, in good times, they do $900 billion. I mean, it's 20, 30% of EBITDA.
Yeah.
And the last couple of years, EBITDA's
been negative.
EBIT's
yeah.
been negative. So
yeah.
Their gross margin has been coming in. I mean, this is a freaking mess. And I think at this valuation, all I can tell you is a couple...
Val, remember, I know it's a mess, but often when these companies go on a roadshow, what they're saying during those roadshows is the following. Yes, we know that this has been our track record up to this meeting, this breakfast, this luncheon, but going forward,
yeah.
because of the offering...
Because of your wise
money,
counsel and
yeah.
money, right.
Here's how things are going to turn around. And they made a convincing enough case that many people bought the stock. So this is one of the cases where I want to look at the fundamentals, and I want to see where those rumors could spring from, but I'm not necessarily going to project them for
it. So you're saying a lot of smart people just bought it at 965. So without even really doing any work, because they all did.
Yeah.
You're like, well, this is worth more. You know, here's what I would say about... the story, and we weren't in on it, you know, but if I were counseling them, or you were, as you might have, or I might have in an earlier era, you know, they're putting up gross margins now of in the mid-20s, and a company like JCPenney back in its better years was doing 35-40% gross margins.
Yeah.
A lot of that can be a couple of things. One is What's in gross margin? Well, real estate cost is in there, so they probably got some stores that are just need to, they're bad. They need to fix that, get their real estate costs in line. And the other thing is reflective of markdowns that come because you chose the wrong merchandise and you're having to mark it down a couple of times before it moves out the door. And on that one, you got to get a better system of making guesses, because that's all they are, but as to what people are going to buy. I know that in recent years, Penny has tried to do stores within a store where they take brands, put them inside, brands that already have resonance, so they're not taking as much style risk, but they're just passing it on to the vendor they use, whether it's a Quiksilver or a Calvin Klein, and you know, you assume that those guys aren't going to miss the right style, but they can miss too. The biggest thing that's happened recently, in my opinion, is that this guy who I can't tell you his name from Apple eliminated the 100-year history of weekly sales that drove traffic into the store on Saturdays. And I don't know, I mean, Apple drove people into the store with new technology. JCPenney has old technology. It's called clothing. And they need to get you into the store in different ways than Apple did, who never put anything on sale because they had cool, best technology. JCPenney doesn't have that. So they gave up nearly a third of their sales to a bad strategy. That's going to come back. And I think the story that they're telling right now to investors is we're going to get our gross margin back because we're going to get traffic back because we're going to get our marketing back. And by the way, we're partnering with strong vendors who have great brands. Our balance sheet's in good shape. And not great shape, needs improvement, but we're going to go forward and take our place. And by the way, we're 10% of sales. And the reason that matters is if you get margin up just a little bit, you know, the stock could be at 0.5% of sales, 0.50% of sales, if you just didn't have the risk of bankruptcy. So I think that's a little bit of the story, Mo. And I don't know if I like it or not, but I'm talking about it here with you.
Well,
maybe,
you know,
I'll get along here.
I'm going to rephrase what I said earlier when I said the company had gone under the microscope for due diligence. Think about it a different way. The institutional community does not give a company $800 million unless there is a use of funds, a compelling use of funds. You can't, you're a banker and I say, I want you to raise $800 million for this company. The first thing you say is a story damn well better be great, not just people cashing in their chips. So,
true.
What would $800 million buy these guys? Well, it will buy them a year or break even, a whole year with no losses.
Well, I think what it buys them, honestly, and what the market was a little worried about in today's action, I mean, it's down 8% today. We're talking about it, catching the falling knife here a little bit, but you know, we're coming into the holiday season. JCPenney does $12 billion in sales. The estimates are $4 billion, $3.9 billion for the holiday season. If their gross margin is 25%, that means they need to come up to sell $4 billion worth of stuff this holiday season. They need to have $3 billion worth of stuff in the stores.
Yes.
In order to sell $4 billion worth of stuff. And so I think the biggest near-term fear was that vendors who were sending JCPenney stuff on credit, you know, merchant credit, they weren't confident that that was going to be safe. And there were some concerns that vendor credit, which is the grease of the retail industry, it's not all a bank loan. It's, hey, Calvin Klein sends over a bunch of jeans, and then I pay them after they're sold. If those vendors start to have concerns and you can't fill your stores, it's death knell. So I think that presumably this offering, because $800 million is, you know, it's 30% of $3 billion. And,
they've just more or less covered that.
It's in effect they've put up 30% cash for the inventory they need for the season, and maybe that's all there really was to it in terms of the need.
Well, it tells you how skittish investors are, that they would think at today that after that kind of an offering that the company was at risk of filing for bankruptcy.
Well, it was in the rumor mill today.
Yeah.
I think that may be an old rumor coming around from before the offering, because the offering gives them the collateral to have a fully stocked Christmas, and then you're off to the races after that.
Right.
I mean, the upside in the stock, and it is a little bit like a call option, even if the bankruptcy risk is high, if it triples from here, you know, it's what is the risk less than a third that it's going to go bankrupt? Then either, it may be a good deal.
Either way, you have a great story.
You have a great story. I'm going to say that Penny will survive in the near term. I can't say long term. I mean, you got a long, you know, Kmart, Sears, Penny. These companies were built for a pre-internet era. They got locations that are old, et cetera. So I'm not going to weigh in on the long-term health of the brand. But I think right now, with their new return to our roots strategy, a little more focus on the higher margin available on the internet, at least incrementally, and at this 0.1 times sales, just a little bit of improvement here, which is almost a dead cat's bounce, not to use one of your technical terms, Mo.
I don't think PETA. I don't think PETA likes that term
anymore.
Yeah,
but I no, they don't.
No,
but we're going to get mail.
You can't bounce cats.
I just
anymore.
I think that you got a lot of forces, and really, your point is very well taken. A lot of smart people just paid $9.65, and the stock's $7.47 right now.
A lot of smart people used to work in Washington too.
That's true. A lot of smart people used to be at our companies. Where are they now, Mo?
So, like you said, it's. Either way, it's a great story.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the next one we need to look at a chart for.
Okay. Newmont Mining, ticker NEM. I'm quite comfortable we know even less about this one than JCPenney. You know, I have a friend I sometimes see on the train, and he's about 80 years old.
Is this a where you get your investment advice story?
No, I don't. No, I just used to work with him, and he's 80 now. And, you know, we're going to be 80 one day. So I get how to be 80 lessons from him. And he was complaining recently about these gold miners and how, you know, it just, you know, owning hard assets for the next generation, diversify, raw materials, forests, oceans,
let's steel, plastics.
You know, and meantime... and you got the chart up here, Mo. We both, I mean, gold has gone from $1,800 an ounce to $1,200 an ounce, and that's causing a lot of pain. Newmont Mining has gone.
Well, how about looking at this long term chart? Gold was about $400 an ounce from 1984 to 1988, to 1992, to 1996, to 2000, to 2004.
Stated.
So for 20 years.
Kind of got used to it there.
For 20 years, it was $40 a share.
No, and it was $400.
Yeah, sorry, $400. And it's gone from $400 to $1,800 since 2004.
I think that's got to be related to the Fed's wild expansion of asset buying with debt and the...
That started after 2000.
And the fear of inflation. Yeah, well, I mean... It started before that. I can't explain this.
Right.
I mean, it's...
anticipation.
I guess. And inflation coming in. And then, you know, this clearly is fear of inflation and the expansion of the money supply. But in case,
but so
in the last 12 months,
right,
12-month low,
right.
This Newmont Mining, the high was 70. It's sitting at 25.88. The last time it was at this price... It's not only the 52-week low, but it's the 7-year, it's 5-year low, Newmont Mining, and I don't know what to take from. I mean, gold is down, but is this the bottom for gold? And you know, how do we know anything about it?
Well, yeah, right. You said earlier. You know, when you look at a chart that's this long, and you say $400 for 20 years. And all of a sudden you're at $1,800 and you're on the way down, the only thing my knee-jerk reaction is to look at that and say, ooh, that looks like what's happened with housing prices. You know, I remember when we sold our home, we had looked at a 100-year chart.
Yeah.
And this is what housing prices were relative to inflation for, you know, and there was a little dip during the Civil War and a little dip during the Depression. And then all after an eternity of being flat, all of a sudden it went straight up.
Yeah.
And that, to me, almost looks like housing prices. So as you said, if we're still trading at 1,400, we may have a long way to go down.
We have a long way to go. And you got to wonder, I think that one of the things that drives gold price, And again, this is all technical type of stuff, but if you try to dig under and get to the fundamentals, when you have emerging economies in China and India particularly, some of these cultures, they really love gold. And I think particularly in India, gold dowries and things like that, you got to have the gold. And I believe in China as well. You got to.
So as those populations explode, yeah, that's driving a long-term secular demand for,
yeah,
gold.
I think so.
Nose,
I
mean, rings is what you're saying.
Well, it's just, I don't know what form. I think gold jewelry.
Right.
Gold, you know. I don't know what the corollary here is in America, what you have to have to bring it. I mean, it's probably, I mean, what would you say? Maybe that's, we'll think of that. But in China, you need gold. You got to have it. If you don't have it, you're nowhere. And as the culture gets richer, there's a big demand for gold. This is what I've heard from people from China. We have a bunch of Chinese companies come through our office.
Somewhere
they describe this cultural phenomenon going in.
So somewhere
it's related to weddings as well, okay, and all that.
So somewhere baked into this chart is the fact that there's a long-term secular demand for gold. But baked into that chart also is QE2 and the risk of inflation. And the question
absolutely
is, have we squeezed that out of gold prices now, or is there still more to go?
My question is, these cultural trends, you know, they can be really critical in the sense that, well, there doesn't seem to be any fundamental reason for it other than people believe in it. And so they sell a lot of crosses in the world, you know, and so will they continue to sell gold? I say yes. These nations that feel richer, you know, this chart also mirrors the growth of the middle class in India and China, you know, and again, this is a thesis. But when you draw the charts, it lines up very nicely. It doesn't prove it. It could be coincidence. But the demand for gold, because the part of the gold demand that's driven from electronic demand is pretty small. I think it's on the order of 15 to 20%. The rest is, jewelry. So I think there could be a long way to fall in a recession where these emerging economies lose income. I do think you have that, but you get into these cultural things, I think they can have a lot of legs. So
I agree. I would only throw one last caution out there, and that is when something has been the same price for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, you've been spending a dollar for something for the last 20 years, and all of a sudden it's at $700.
Yeah.
You do sort of wonder if it can stay there.
Well, demand may pop down then, and that'll bring the price back down.
But I would be...
So on Newmont, now here's the thing. These guys, they earn a spread, right? They produce. So,
they do.
You know, gold up, gold down. Now, the fact is, the sales are down the last 2 years, just like the price of gold. So maybe it does pretty much mirror gold price. I don't know how to...
All right, I have a totally different take on this.
I don't know how to...
I got a question for you. Totally different take.
Let's do it. Listeners deserve no less.
This is a company with almost a 4% dividend yield. If we buy it as a dividend-paying
entity... Let's focus
entity,
on that.
Yeah.
All right. What's the payout ratio?
Exactly. Can it... Because, you know, that's a 4% yield. That's a pretty decent
yield. Okay, well, I like this, Mo, because look, over the last 7 years, earnings have mostly been above the level of the current dividend, which is $1.19. And when I say mostly, that just means not every year.
Right.
It's volatile. But they're paying $1.19. The stock is $25.88.
Right.
And that's some kind of yield that this says is 4%.
Yeah.
Great. I'm in.
All right.
Because that was going to be very confusing if we actually had to figure out if the company was worth it.
Well, we could do... Let's just hold on one second. Hold on.
I will say that the margins
seem good.
This
would be pretty hard to play guess the dividends. Look at the dividends per share.
It's all over the map.
Yeah.
Plus, EBITDA margins are down for 4 straight years.
Yeah, there must be some kind of a flow through
you know.
that when these guys have a windfall on the spread... Maybe there's a special dividend.
Now, enterprise value to EBITDA, favorite ratio, 7. That means cash on cash return is 14. That means we could get a bunch of friends, buy it. It's roughly 20, I guess, billion. Is that right? No.
Is it? Probably.
Is it 20 billion?
I don't think we could come up with more than...
I don't know what the market cap here is. It's a lot of zeros. But in any case, if we bought the whole thing, we would earn a 14% cash-on-cash return.
Unless it went bankrupt, then you would own...
Well, then we'd have a call zero. If it did that. I mean, we got to pay off the bondholders, but there's really not a ton of debt here. Unless, I guess, $6 billion is just not that much. The total book value is $30 billion, and the enterprise value, I guess that's got to be billion, is... $20 billion. So on $20 billion, the debt of $6 doesn't seem that much. And so maybe that's affordable. Anyway, 52-week low, Newmont Mining, 4% yield, worth a look, right?
It's definitely one of the dicier ones.
Okay. Next. Last up.
Nuance.
Nuance Communication, ticker NUAN. Pass the screen. 52-week low. That's all we need to know.
So they provide language solutions.
Oh, yes. It gets much... Well, not only do they do that, they provide...
A language solution.
They provide transcription solutions as well, and language solutions.
Not just transcriptions.
No, that would be too one-dimensional, obviously.
Transcription.
Yeah. Well, they have multiple things. They do... Did I mention that they did the transcription?
Yes.
And then...
And they have language platforms.
Yes.
Now,
so, here's obviously the scope of this.
What's the difference between a language platform and a train platform?
Well, one is primarily horizontal, of course.
Yes.
And one is a little more vertical and shorter.
Oh.
I think largely.
Yeah, okay.
And, of course, these guys do the latter.
They do a ladder?
They do that. The ladder one, the smaller vertical
one. What kind
of
a ladder?
A ladder that has a lot of electronics plugged into it that plug into other things. And when you get into this a little more, what you learn is that they provide...
language platforms.
Well, it's basically telecom equipment that gets messages and converts them to a different thing. So if speech is coming in on your wire, it can turn it to text. If text is coming in on your wire, it can turn it to speech. You know, that kind of thing.
Got it.
Cross-platform, text to speech, speech to text. I think those are the main things that they deal with. I don't see that they're turning anything into light
to put the company in perspective. You know, we can talk about it that way, and you think that there's like five guys sitting in a, you know, in a Silicon Valley warehouse somewhere cranking out this software. There's 12,000 people who work at this company.
Don't you think half of them are salespeople trying to find the next customer?
That's probably true.
Well, this is at a 52-week low, so there's some hair on it. Now, the thing that I thought was interesting about this versus some of the other 52-week low names we looked at was this wasn't plunging. It's been a gradual approach to the 52-week low. They did it with some grace, a little style, you know. We're kind of consistently having you think we're okay, but then, oops, we get a little worse. It's not like there's one big event where, oh, they're horrible. They've kind of just brought you down easy. In fact, we're just down to where they were in 2011 after a jump in 2012. So it's almost like they're nicer neighbors. They don't, there's no trauma here. It just... easing down. They were at a high of 30, you know, a year or so ago. Now they're at 17. No big deal, you know.
Right.
And so from that point of view, I thought it was interesting. And then, you know, the only thing I see here that would cause it to go down 50% is that the analysts' estimates have gone down 50%. I love when it's that easy. It's like nothing changed. It's got a P.E. multiple, and now E is down 50%, so it's down 50%. The EBITDA margins have been consistent. They're growing.
in the 20s and hit 30 this next year. Gross margin in the 50s, consistently rising for, it looks like, 6 years. They have a fair amount of debt, so that's something to be a little concerned about, I guess. Total debt is $1.7 billion. Their market cap is $5 billion. So, again, that's a ratio I like to pay some attention to. EBITDA looks like it's just going up. So why is the stock down? And all I can suggest is that it was overpriced and that analysts got way ahead of themselves on all the estimates growing too fast, and they've had to come in and they're spinning stories of management lying about their earnings or we've been bagged or all the kind of stuff that tries to make them feel a little better or, frankly, protect themselves in the company of angry salespeople, which I know you've also experienced, Mo. Sometimes you have to just lie in order to, you know, until you can get to the elevator, get off that floor. So it could be that. But it looks to me like they've missed earnings. They told all the analysts 6 months ago. And yet they still have up sales, up margins, up earnings. And on that basis, I think it's kind of interesting.
Well, you know, I was just trying to figure something out. I was looking at the chart going way back. And if this was a rumor-driven stock or a new product breakthrough kind of stock, I might think we're at a low ebb in that cycle because back in 2006, this stock was, you know, $15 a share. Something happened to it, boom, and it went to 25. Then there was a disappointment and the financial crash, and it went to 10. Then there was excitement, and it went to 20. Then there was more excitement, and it went to 30. And now you're back to 15 again. So it's a stock that bounces at this $15 to $17 level at the end of a big disappointment. Something comes along, there's a big whoop-de-doo, and the stock's done this twice, three times in the since 2007. So I'm wondering, all right, we're at a low ebb technically. Could there be a breakthrough in one of their... So if that's what's driven it in the past, maybe we're at a point where it'd be a nice springboard if they have some good news. Based on the estimate revisions, there's a lot of bad news baked into it already. Most estimates have come down between 30 and 50% for the last 6 months. So, I don't know. What do you see in the numbers? Do you see any fundamental reason why this thing is... It's been two tough years for this stock.
I think that my takeaway is that they simply had people, you know, or themselves. It's not always the, you know, company that gets it wrong. Sometimes the analysts get it wrong. Sometimes nobody knows. You make your best shot. But the point is, management and analysts have been disappointed the last year with the progress of the sales growth, and the stock is down 50% as a result. But sales aren't down. It's just that the growth rate is down. So when I look at year-over-year numbers, and I'm looking at a chart that shows that, the fourth quarter, so the number that's about to hit, September of 2013 versus September 2012, that quarterly sales number is flat. It hasn't been reported, but that's the estimate, and this company gives guidance, so that's probably pretty accurate. And that-